One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We're recording. Do you start your podcast with sort of like inane chat?
Yeah.
You just drop in somewhere where someone's saying something sort of random like
this.
Huge shoes, you know what I mean? Like, what's with it? Feet, man. I can't believe it sometimes. They're so big. Is that like inane enough podcast chat to start with?
Hello, brother. This is Stephen Allison. This is the Stephen Allison Football Channel, and this is the... What did we decide it was going to be called, Rob?
The warm down.
It's the warm down. Thank you to all you guys on Twitter. This is a new show that I've sort of come up with, and we've gone with the name The Warm Down because this is going to be on the day after the matches on the weekend. I say the day. Hopefully, it's going to be on the Monday following the weekend's matches. And at the moment, that's just every Sunday for United. Hopefully, it's going to end up on a Saturday because I just needed a Monday show that I can do regular. And it's going to be a little bit of a video podcast where I talk to some of my favourite people in the world of YouTube and football. And today, I couldn't find any of them, so I got Rob on. And Rob's my favourite West Ham fan. And he's also my favourite guy that sends in clips to BT. The guy I think should have his own show. I think it's criminal that they're not putting you on Football Republic a lot more. How's it going, Rob? Anyway, what's happening?
Yeah, not too bad. I quite enjoyed that sort of opening speech. It kind of came like one of those Googled best man speeches. You know, the one where it's like, oh, yeah, well, you should always do a toast for as long as the best man lasts in bed or whatever it was. No, not the best man. It'd be mugging yourself off. The groom lasts in bed. Then everyone knows the punchline.
Yeah, everyone can see the punchline coming. But do you know what? Sometimes you got to throw a dad joke in there every now and then, aren't you, just to keep things going along, aren't you?
Well, they're crowd pleasers. They don't make it onto Google if they're rubbish, do they?
Amen, brother. So this is going to be a video podcast every Monday. It's probably going to come out around about fucking midnight because I'm not going to get these done until I finish work. Then I've got to edit them. You know how long that shit takes exporting in Premiere. So expect these around about midnight every Monday, give or take, I don't know, a day or two. And there we go. It'll also be available on iTunes, or if you're one of those poverty-stricken people who's on Android, you'll find it on wherever you find your podcasts on Android. But anyway, thank you guys for joining us. A big welcome to Rob. Go give him a follow on Twitter. The name is on the screen and in the description below. We're just watching on the screen over here as well. We're watching the last couple of minutes, so the last half an hour of the Arsenal game. And Middlesbrough are doing the Lord's work at the moment, aren't they? We all know what we want to happen. Middlesbrough kind of delivering. How do you see this turning out? Everyone's going to know the result by now, but how do you see this last half an hour going?
I mean, like we said just before we started recording, like you, I would put it past Middlesbrough to score because I just don't see them ever scoring a goal, but then I'd never be surprised to see Arsenal throw it away unless it was West Ham. But they always looking a bit shaky. We've just seen them have a shot saved off the line there. Is it still there? Arsenal got that fourth choice keeper in them at the moment, haven't they? Because Cech's injured.
I don't know. I've not seen the lineup. I came into the game about 10 minutes after it had started. I was watching True Geordie's podcast with Lawrence. I was making notes for all the things that I have to tweet about to Lawrence where he's just wrong. It's like a phone book, the amount of shit that I have to tweet Lawrence. But I was just watching True Geordie's podcast. Then I seen the time and I was like, oh shit, Arsenal's on. Can't be missing this. Why are they playing every Monday night as well at the moment? I don't know what all that's about. They've just become the Monday night favourites, haven't they?
Good time for a circus, isn't it?
Oh, hang on. Have we just happened upon a conspiracy theory here? Did Gary Neville call out Arsenal Fan TV knowing that Arsenal would be on every Monday night coming up?
That's what it is. And that's why it was so, you know, it wasn't confrontational at all, was it? It was like Monday night football. Great time for a showpiece carnival event that is the Arsenal, capitulation this season. They know what they're doing. They're making money.
Do you reckon people watch Arsenal Fan TV than the Arsenal matches?
I think, yeah. I mean, that channel is, my God, breathing a new lease of life into it this season, isn't it?
It is all opposition fans, though, and we do have some Arsenal fans comment on full-time Devils and stuff, and they say it's just all opposition fans just taking a piss. Yeah. I wouldn't ever want full-time Devils to end up like that, in all honesty, because it's hard enough. I give Ashley Young stick yesterday for not having a great game, because I didn't think he had a great game, funnily enough. And the amount of shit in there, Jesus Christ!
I was reading that Ashley Young is a rejuvenated man. apparently at 32, he's found his young legs again.
He was the worst player on the pitch. Now, that's not to say, oh, there was lots of bad performances and he was the worst of the lot. I'm just trying to find the volume on it because I think you're going to bleed through into the main one and I can't find it. Where is it? Is it that one? Is it that one?
Do you want me to whisper?
No, it's okay. There we go, found it. There's an overscan on this screen and it's doing me head in. he was the worst player on the pitch in a team that performed really well. That's still probably a pretty good performance by his standards, but he was the worst player on the pitch. Nearly 40% of his passes went to the opposition. He had like one tackle, I think, or two interceptions, and people are like, he was excellent. You're like, we've got different definitions of excellent. I thought he was all right. He obviously
he was
played a part.
For Ashley Young then, wasn't he?
He was what?
He was good for him. He was excellent for Ashley Young.
No, not even excellent for Ashley Young. I think he was all right. I think people are overstating because of how good the performance was from a team. Everyone gets a 9. Well, sometimes it's not like that, is it? Sometimes you can have passengers or something. You can just be the worst player in a good team performance. Doesn't necessarily mean I want the guy stabbed or to never play for Manchester United again. Although, the latter,
we only had one bad game away from that. Certainly with you.
He's just not United standard, is he? I don't even think he's West Ham standard, mate. I think if he goes to the Championship, he'd probably struggle to be a first-choice regular that's performing well. He's a 6 out of 10 player on a regular basis.
Yeah, well,
uninspiring. People go, he's a great crosser. I'm sorry, I grew up watching David Beckham. Please don't mention him in the same sentence as being a crosser ever again. It was nonsense. Let's talk about United and Chelsea yesterday, because I think I'm being biased, but I think that was the biggest game of the weekend in everybody's eyes.
It's funny. I mean, all the talk about it really has been Costa, isn't it? All the Chelsea fans have started. Have you seen, like, you know, football Twitter is a wonderful place in the sense that it's a terrible place. there are Chelsea fans now with hashtag Costa out as their name. God. You know, rather than having some shitty play on words like they normally have, it's like, F their Costa out. I can't believe it. Bench him. Get him out of the club until he starts playing better.
How long has he not scored in? He hasn't scored in a while, has he?
Yeah, I saw that he lost the ball 10 times yesterday, like, which is, you know, that's pretty impressive, really.
That's also a testament to how well drilled Ashley's United's defence was. I think you've got there's two sides to every story, isn't there? And you could say maybe Costa was sloppy, but he was also crowded out every single time he got the ball. A lot of them was. And I don't think...
Yeah.
Well, Chelsea, like United, should be used to that sort of... intense defending, I would have thought, because we come across it all the time, don't we?
Yeah, it's 2-1. Ertzl just scored.
I'm behind.
Yeah. No, sorry. I ruined everything.
all these people watching in 2 hours and are like, oh.
I used to have a job where we had to do live tweeting. And you know, like, every man and his dog does live tweeting. We were watching the games on Now TV, so I was live tweeting from other people's tweets because I was 2.5 minutes behind. So I was just trying to like draw a picture of the goals in my head based on like BBC's tweets or whatever. This is what we are like now. We're giving score updates, you know, some people 3 days late or something.
If you're watching this and you didn't know how Arsenal had gone down, you are contractually obliged to comment and saying, didn't know that. That was how the game went down. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks
for the update. Again. I think this... I'm watching on the Sky Go app because I don't watch on streams because they frustrate the shit out of me. Taking 20 minutes to get it on. See, just earlier when they scored, it froze and I was like, oh, the screen just froze. It comes back on and they've scored. How's that work? It just froze there and it's just showing the celebration now. So, yeah, I'm watching on the Sky Go app and it just freezes every time they score. Nonsense.
I do the same, and I worked out about 3 or 4 months ago. If you go on the little scrubber bar, you can push it forward about 40 seconds, so you're less delayed.
Oh.
I know. Literally bringing you into the future.
But life pro tip.
A minute in the past, yeah.
From Rob Armstrong. Are you getting witty football bants, but you're also getting tips to help you get 40 seconds further in the
bring
day.
You one less minute delayed than you used to be. What were we talking about? Chelsea.
Yeah, United and Chelsea yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Do you see the second goal? Do you see Gary Cahill picking up Lingard?
No. From where I'm sat, obviously, you can't really make out a lot of detail, generally, of what's really going on, can you? You need TV replays to sort of see what's going on with everything. But, yeah, I've seen the picture of him picking him up. That's what you want your centre-half to be doing, don't you, in important moments like that?
I mean, it was proper crunch time as well. I think like the shot came in, wasn't it? It's from the left hand side, wasn't it? I mean, don't get me wrong, you wouldn't have blocked it, but you could still see him doing something a little bit more useful than picking Lingard up off his arse. But at Chelsea, I think there's a lot of sort of paranoia in the Chelsea fans. It's because, I mean, Spurs have just been on such a surge, haven't they? Basically, the last two seasons. But for that, you know, when they completely lost their heads at the end of last year, I think they're just making everyone nervous because they just keep grinding out results. They just don't lose, do they?
I don't think you could say it's grinding out results. I think they're turning up and blowing things away, actually.
I think Chelsea fans are nervous now because the lead's only 4 points now as well. And, you know, Chelsea needs to win 5 games of their last 6 or 7, and they probably will. But and Spurs was obviously have to win all of theirs. But yeah. I think it's funny. It's because we see Chelsea, you know, finished so poorly last year, had 10th place last year, and then they've got this new manager, and it'll be interesting to see how they finish out and whether they've got that sort of winning mentality or whether they sort of revert to form from last year and start losing concentration, slipping up in games, and if the title race becomes a lot closer than we thought it was going to be in the first place.
With the with the emergence of like this real solid top six that we've had this season and all of the top managers that are in that top six, how do you see it panning out over the next 2 or 3 years? Do you think there's going to have to be like a bit of a war of attrition where some clubs just sort of hunker down and go, let's just ride it out. We've put our money behind this man. We think this is the guy. Shit's going to go worse for a couple of years, but we've got to back him and just stick with him. What do you reckon?
Yeah. I mean, in my total naivety, I thought Arsenal were going to have a good year this year because of basically the last 2 years. That Leicester thing happened last year because so many teams in the last sort of 2 or 3 years have pressed the reset button, haven't they? I mean, you're a Man United fan. Obviously, you are still going through the sort of Fergie transition. And, I mean, now you've got Mourinho. It's probably wise to sort of invest in him for a few years. Jurgen Klopp, they didn't buy him because they wanted him for a season. They bought him because they want him for 10 years.
And the fans have massively fell in love with him. I don't know if that FSG are going to be of the same sort of mentality, but the fans at least, and him with the fans, there's a massive connection there, you have to admit. Even as a United fan looking at Liverpool, you have to go, they've bonded really well together, aren't they, as a manager and a club?
Yeah, and it's the same with for Chelsea as well. They've bought Conte for the future, haven't they? They're not getting rid of him. Or, you know, maybe they'll finish...
It's Abramovich you're talking about, though, so... Yeah. I still put, even if they win the title this year, he's still my favourite to get sacked.
Yeah, well, isn't it the only manager who's won the league in the last 5 years who hasn't been sacked the next season was Pellegrini, wasn't it? And then he was sacked the season after. So, yeah, no loyalty in the game these days. Right? Mind you, Billich.
Conte and Chelsea, they're go through the top six, right? Apart from Wenger, who I don't think will be sacked. It'll either be he doesn't renew or he does renew. I don't think they're sacking him, regardless of what goes on outside the ground. I don't think United are sacking Mourinho for the reasons we've just mentioned. The reasons we mentioned with Klopp and Liverpool, I can see him being sacked maybe second out of all that lot, but certainly not to the extent I could see with Conte because of the buy-in from the fans. I think the club, even though like FSG might not be the most on the ball, I think they understand the connection that's going on between Klopp and Liverpool, and I think they'd be absolute riots if they got rid of Klopp for maybe finishing fifth this season. City and Guardiola, I'd be amazed if they sack him. They've literally built this club for him for the last couple of years, so there's no way he's getting a sack. Which basically leaves... you got Pochettino and Spurs. I think there's a massive buy-in there. Unless he leaves, I can't see him being sacked. I can see him leaving. I can't see him being sacked. So you're left with Conte, who probably is going to win the league this year and probably will be the first one sacked out of the lot, which is nuts.
Yeah, well, Pochettino's an interesting one because the only thing, you know, if... I'm a West Ham fan, so I'm not knocking the size of Spurs as a club, but Spurs is not the same size club as Arsenal. It's not the same size club as Chelsea. It's not the same size club as Man United. If Spurs were in that upper... you know, that real top 4 or 5 massive clubs in the country, you would say, oh yeah, Pochettino will be there forever. But the fact it's Spurs and it's not one of the huge ones is the only reason you would see that.
Even United, we still get our players poached by Real Madrid. So if Real Madrid came calling, although I don't think they were, I think they're pretty settled with Zidane. But I think Barcelona might come calling.
But isn't he, I mean, I know it probably means nothing, but he was a Spaniard, wasn't he?
Yeah, and Mark Hughes was a Man United Academy player.
Yeah. But, you know, Bayern Munich, who've they got? Ancelotti? He won't be around forever.
He won't be around forever. No, Paris. Paris changed the manager fairly often. They could go with Pochettino, I think. So, I don't think...
Well, didn't he? So, there's a lot of places you can see him going just because it's... You know, just because of the size of the club and, you know, what you want to say about a new challenge or whatever, I'm not sure you know, how much I ever buy into how I want a new challenge.
I think it'll also depend on what happens with them this season and what happens with them over the summer, because let's face some facts, right? Arsenal are probably going to spend some money, right? Whether Wenger stays or not. They probably are going to spend some money. I'm pretty sure United are going to spend obscene amounts of cash. City will probably be, if not ahead of us again, not far behind us. Liverpool probably won't get as much, but they'll spend. I think Conte winning the league will be able to go and demand a bit of cash from Chelsea. So Spurs literally need to spend 70, 80, 90, 100 million to keep up.
Yeah, and I mean, with Levy, it's never a thing they're particularly willing to do, is it? With Spurs, it's still, despite the fact that they've challenged for the title 2 years in a row, it's still, who can we sell to get the money? Obviously, they've got the Champions League money, and that's...
But they've got this new stadium, which I don't think's cheap. London builders and all that shit.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, next year is going to be tough as well. I mean, speaking from experience, going into a new stadium where you don't feel like home, they were hopeless at home in the Champions League and the Europa League this year as well. Obviously, it wasn't home. It was Wembley. And I think, you know, that might... be coming at the worst possible time for them, because if they've built this momentum over the last 2 years, last two seasons, they're going to lose all that momentum by probably drawing 10 games at home next year. You know, that if you lose your home advantage, it's a lot to lose.
Why do you have to talk about draws, man?
But I've got no sympathy with anyone, right? We just drew with Sunderland, so... we can see...
Talk me through that then. Let's talk me through that game this weekend, because I've not seen it. David Moyes' Sunderland are one of the worst teams I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shambles, isn't it? Basically, like, any team that or any player that is on a drought, a goal-scoring drought, or, I don't know, say, bloody Burnley haven't had a defender score in 28 years. Every time it will be West Ham where they break that hoodoo or whatever. Like, Sunderland haven't scored in 730 minutes of football. Oh, of course they scored two against West Ham. One of them was from a bloody corner, straight from a corner.
I've not seen anything of the game whatsoever.
I mean, it's like schoolboy stuff. Victor Anichebe has just stood in front of Darren Randolph. And it's like, everyone knows, Sunday League, you know, if someone stands in front of your keeper, you clear him out, get rid of him. Anichebe has halfway back into his own goal. The ball just like sails straight over his head. So what is he doing? And then, you know, we get 2-1 up and, you know, everything looks like it's going to be all right. 90th minute, I think there was 10 minutes injury time as well, but it was sort of like 91st, 92nd minute. Randolph comes out again. He's an absolute stinker and comes out. He punches it sort of nothing and he punches it straight to Barini. And, you know, like I'm saying with strikers with droughts or whatever, like, who is Barini going to score against? He's not, like, of course he's going to score against West Ham. I know he scored against you lot, didn't he? He scored an absolute pearler, but you're already 3-0 up.
Not scored on Boxing Day?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I think it was Old Trafford, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was at Old Trafford on Boxing Day, yeah. I can't remember if it was him that scored or not, though.
So that's the only other goal he's scored, I think, this season. And of course, he comes out with a last-minute winner against West. Last-minute equaliser feels like a loss. Last-minute equaliser against West Ham. But the thing is, it's been such a weird season in transition for us. What with the stadium thing, we've really, really struggled at home. You know, all our wins really have been bad 1-0 wins at home, and that's against Swansea, Burnley, Hull, Bournemouth. We've struggled to beat them, but we have got the results because there is obviously talent and class in the team. But, you know, we had Payet last year and we didn't really have him for about 2 or 3 months this year. You could tell in the build up to January, you could tell he was, you know, head was elsewhere. And fair enough, because we were what, like 17th or 18th? And, you know, I say fair enough, like, obviously, he's still a wanker. And, you know, it was totally...
He can't be the only reason that you fell off the way you did. Because I remember the back end of last season, everyone was talking Bilic up as this new up-and-coming manager. you're not hearing any of that this season. So it can't just be on player.
Yeah, last season, I feel like we got the signings right. Particularly the big one was Payet, and we got that right. This summer, the transfer business we did was dreadful. You know, I would say Ayew is only just starting to look like he might be, all right. But he was 20 million quid. And, there was the whole Zaza shambles for the first half of the year as well. We sent him back. Now he's, I say he's banging him in for Valencia. He scored against Tony Adams' team. So he actually got Tony Adams the job, didn't he? He got that Granada manager sacked by scoring two in 2 minutes. If Zaza scores two against you, you know something's going wrong. You've got to sack your manager immediately. But yeah, it's like you look at defence and it's just simple things. We don't have a right back. We've got Sam Barham now, but he was injured. Should have signed another one in January because he was still injured. And there are questions about how good he is as well. We look better when we've got a right back at right back because obviously we've been playing Mikel Antonio everywhere. But it's just such poor transfer business. People are getting annoyed with the owners as well because it feels like it's false promises coming after false promises after false promises.
Even for me watching as a United fan and looking at West Ham as a club, your owners seem like utter bellends. They seem like some of the worst owners in the league, and I can't really pinpoint why I think that. It's just like a vibe that you get off them that these are just dicks, man.
They really struggle. David Gold is obviously, a shrewd businessman, but seems to be a little bit sort of thick at times. David Sullivan is like an egomaniac, he's like, he has to say things in the press. He has to say, oh, we think this is this manager. Oh, this signing was me. This signing was me. And stuff like, his kids go on Twitter and announce signings and stuff. And it's sort of, it's not really the way you do things, is it? You don't send your son off to his phone to tweet out that you've just landed a £20 million striker. And with all the stuff in the summer, we kept saying we were going to get like Carlos Bacca and stuff, like actual genuine top class striker. And you get Jack Sullivan tweeting about it. And don't get me wrong, it's his right. He's a West Ham fan. He can say what he wants, but you probably should say maybe not the official stuff, son.
If your old man's the chairman, that's literally going out and conducting some of the deals, you shouldn't be talking about them.
Yeah. And then you get Karen Brady as well, who's, the stadium, in theory, is like an incredible piece of business, but it's just gone so horribly wrong because it's come at this season where it's like they lied to us about, oh, we're going to get this world-class striker. They lied to us about, oh, Payet's happy and everything like that. They clearly lied to Payet about, we're going to sign this, that and the other.
Yeah.
And then it's like we've had all these lies about the stadium. And at the beginning of the season, they were, they're throwing fans out left, right and centre because people were standing up and sitting down. And, that's an organisational problem. That's every club.
What's
has
the crap with all the fighting amongst fans in the stands as well? Because that's,
yeah,
that's just a West Ham thing that you've seen this season. It might just be because that's who's been reported, but it feels like it was every game for like the first half of the year at West Ham.
Yeah, it was. And they didn't have police radios in the ground until October. And this is West Ham we're talking about. Don't get me wrong, it's not the 80s. So we're not all there in Stone Island jackets, right, and Stanley knives, but it's still West Ham. It can be a pretty feisty atmosphere at times, and to throw 60,000 of them in a stadium without police radios, so there's no police presence in the ground, and then
what
they've
was
got
using pigeons.
They're doing smoke signals out the top of the ground. Got this big new roof. It's really good for blowing circles. they just weren't ready. The ground should have been. I don't know why we rushed into a stadium that we knew wasn't ready. Like they must have known they were going to need. They were going to need police radio. They must have known this. We couldn't play at home for ages at the beginning of the season because the stadium wasn't in football mode. It's like, well, isn't this what the whole last 2 years of building's been about? It's been about putting it in football mode,
not just drawing numbers everywhere.
Not ready for the start of the season. Let's go next year.
Yeah.
And it was all covered up by the fact we had such a good season last year, but You know, I say such a good season. We still finished seventh. Right? It's and everyone seems to think like, oh, we were so close to Europe. And yeah, there were a couple of results at the end of the year. Like the Stoke game, the Swansea game that we threw away. If we'd won both of them, we would have been the bloody Champions League, but we didn't. You know, you can say if we won whatever game, we would have been wherever in the league. And West Ham, we have a good season every now and again. And then we always have a shit season afterwards. But because of all that kind of like thing about, oh, farewell Bolin and everything like that, saying goodbye to Upton Park, everything was all so perfect and all seemed so, it was such a great ending to that kind of chapter. The fact that this year has been so disappointing, it just makes everything worse. You know, if we were sixth, you know, no one would care about the owners, no one would care about Payet, no one would care about the stadium. It would all be loving everything. But it's that combination of everything has been bad, everything has been poorly thought out, like so many false promises. And yeah, you know, I worry, well, I don't worry because obviously I hate Spurs, but like, you know, I think Spurs might have that situation. This is what I'm saying about that losing your momentum before going into a new stadium, or losing your momentum by going into a new stadium. If they don't get off to a good start next season at that new stadium, I feel like they're going to have so many of the same problems as us. And then they're going to move into their actual new stadium, having lost that sort of momentum they've got. You know, they're right up there with the best teams in England.
This is what happened with Arsenal, wasn't it? They left Highbury after, yeah. Didn't they do the invincible season at Highbury and then moved into the Emirates and was like...
Whoa. Yeah, it was like two seasons later, wasn't it? And, you know, with Arsenal, it was there was a big thing with the money as well. And I'm not sure how much it's costing Spurs to build a new stadium, because they've got that huge input from the NFL, haven't they? So I think the NFL is putting like 200 million quid into the new stadium as well.
I don't know, is that much? Fucking hell.
Isn't it? I think it's a lot. I mean, it's the NFL. They can throw 200 million whatever they like, can't they?
I guess.
They can sponsor hot dogs or something. Whatever. Or popcorn in our ground. Which is the most offensive thing of the new stadium is the popcorn. But, I mean, save that for another night.
Tell me what's good about the new stadium then. Because visually it looks kind of impressive until you see the big gaps in the middle of everything, which make no fucking sense.
Yeah, it's mad. I can't believe, you know, it's... So we got a stadium for about 10 million quid and we pay 2 million quid a year and it's huge, right? So, and it does, it looks great. And I think a lot of people complain about the transport, say like, oh, it takes me so long to get home now. But we've gone from Upton Park to Stratford, and Stratford is like connected to about six different train lines, and Upton Park was shit, basically.
You know, Upton Park on the tube was not the easiest fucking gaff to get to.
No, it was a nightmare. But I think people kind of...
They had the routine and the routes and the little jibs.
They know their route. They're so familiar with it. Now you're trying to work out that new match day experience and stuff, which, you know, at Stratford, you're walking through a shopping centre, you know, beforehand. And if you want to go to a proper sort of East End booze or whatever before the game, you're in Stratford. And then you have to walk, you know, 25 minutes, half an hour to get to Stratford City or the Olympic Park, whatever you want to call it. Or you can go into like Hackney Wick and drink beer with all the blokes with beards and stuff.
Sort of fucking bears, mate.
Oh no, I'm not saying that. But like, if you added like about another sort of this much length on it,
and a curly mustache.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
and a monocle, even though I've got no fucking problems with my vision whatsoever.
And a hat made
from a monocle,
homemade material.
We're in injury time here, by the way. Now with Arsenal, I think Arsenal are going to win. Unfortunately.
Yeah, should be closing it out. I mean, Middlesbrough they offer so little going forward, don't they? Can't believe Negredo's got 8 goals, actually. He was on about 2 goals last time I checked. But, I think they've looked destined to go down for a good 2 or 3 months now, haven't they? I think it's going to be a horrible time for the North East, generally, in the Premier League. I think it's...
Well, they've got Newcastle more than likely going to come back up, aren't they? I think it's not nailed on yet, but they're going to come back up. Yeah, it does me head in that the North East always refer to this hotbed of football, and you're like, is it?
Yeah.
Is it really? London and the North East completely fucking shits on it in terms of football clubs and successful football clubs. Like, you're talking 3, 4, I suppose, if you want to include the likes of Hartlepool and stuff, towns or cities with one team in them each. Can you imagine Manchester had one team?
What a happy world we'd live in if it was City.
Yeah, or Liverpool had one team. Because that's the size of Newcastle and Sunderland. Liverpool and Manchester, it's the same thing, yeah.
And think of all them teams around... Oh, is that 3-1? No. Yeah, I mean, think about all them teams in Greater Manchester as well.
And the part of Manchester that I live in is called Tameside. And there are 10 league clubs and non-league clubs in Tameside.
Yeah.
It's got a population of about 80 people. And it's 10 football clubs.
Do you see the... if you can find it on Twitter, there's a photo of the Brighton game today. How many away fans Wigan took down? I'm pretty sure it will be double digits. It's not a lot. They've got like a sort of sliver of the away section. If you've been given like a sort of 4-seat long section, pretty poor.
I went to CSK Sofia. I don't know if you've seen the vlog. And Ludogorets. That's first place third in the Belgian First League. No one really watches football in Belgium, but you know what? It was a fucking great atmosphere. Has that gone in? No, it's not gone in.
Belgium, do you mean Bulgaria?
Yeah, did I say Belgian? I meant Bulgarian.
That sounds different to... I didn't realise you
pronounced totally different. It. One's all about chocolates. I don't know what Bulgaria's famous for.
I don't know. Cheap stag do's?
Possibly. Yeah. Well, either way, there was about 6,000 or 7,000 in the whole place. And there was 13 away fans. From Ludogorets, who are top of the league as well, which you would think that, maybe have a half-decent following. 13 away fans.
It's not that big a... The away fan thing isn't as big in other countries, is it? You look at, like, Spain.
Yeah, they don't bother.
No one, do they? There's that... When Atletico won Atletico Madrid won the league at Barcelona 2 or 3 years ago, and you see the Atletico fans, there's, like, 40 of them.
Yeah, my mate was there. My mate Ben was there, and he said there was just this, like, fucking red section in the top left. I'm sure he said there was, like... Was it 200 that they'd give them? Fucking old 100 and something thousand, done it, the new camp.
Yeah,
and they give them, like, top tier, right in the corner, fuck off. But there wasn't even a presentation. That's what I found really bizarre. Because Athletic had won the league that season, hadn't they? And I think it could have gone three ways, I think, that season. Athletic pulls it out of the bag.
It could have gone three ways.
And there's no presentation at the end of the game. They did it in, like, Madrid, like, 2 days later.
Yeah.
That's not right, that. You win stuff at football. You get on a pitch with it afterwards, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. But imagine having the trophy and then pointing up to all four of your mates up in the stand. It's like,
right, Dave?
loads of crying Barcelona fans with the white hankies out. Like,
my mate was sat behind. I think it was Courtois was there at the time, I think, still. And he said he was sat either behind or next to Courtois' girlfriend because he came over at the end of the game. He said, Barcelona fans had fucked off. Obviously. Yeah. He said then they just sort of did, like, not really a lap of honour, but they just sort of stayed clapping the fans and stuff. And then he goes, he came over to where they were sat. He's sitting there in a blue United shirt.
it is weird watching football out there. We went out there a couple of months ago and went to a Sevilla game. And they just sit there eating nuts.
Eating like, nuts?
The noise in the first half of people eating bags of nuts is, like, deafening. It's all you can hear.
I do enjoy that about going checking out other cultures and stuff. And me and Dave obviously went to Scotland for Celtic and Barcelona, and that's not really that much different, in all honesty, as you probably would imagine. Then we went to Germany and we did Leipzig and Frankfurt, and obviously you can drink on a terrace there.
Yeah.
And some of the inventions that they've come up with so you can drink on the terraces is fucking brilliant. So they've got safe standing. So the seats are, they're very high up your back, the seats.
Yeah, it's a bars. Isn't it?
Although you stand, yeah. But no, it was a really tall plastic seat, which I guess counts as a rail for the from the one in front, because it was fairly high. But then you get these cups for your beer. So it was like pint glasses with a handle. And I was just thinking, it's like the Steiners, isn't it, that they have?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not, because the handle's hollow, which means that you can buy, like, five of them and the handle goes in, like, and goes round. Yeah. So you can hold, like, five in each hand. For the lads. But not only that as well, when you get back to your seat, it hooks on the back of the seat.
Oh.
The Germans are fucking geniuses.
Right, well, I mean, you say what you want about Germany, but they love the beer, don't they? You know, if there's one thing they're going to look out for, it's the beer drinkers. In Schalke Stadium, they've got, I think you have to go in the posh boy seats, but they've got the beer tap that runs to the seats. Because, you know, they built the... Where is it? Well, it's Gelsenkirchen or something.
Can you repeat what you just said, please?
They have a beer tap that runs to your seat in the VIP section.
Why didn't we let them win in the World War II?
It's because they built it for the World Cup. So it's the Schalke Stadium, and in the all the VIP bits, they were just sitting there pouring themselves beers.
That's got to be a VIP only thing. It's got to be.
I wonder how many grounds do it now, though. Because it can't just be
one,
them.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's right. Put that on the list. We're going there. Fucking hell, that's awesome.
The only one I've been to.
In Bulgaria, at the CSKA Sofia game, there was loads of people selling bottles of water outside. Do you all, like, you see those swag sellers at Old Trafford with scarves and fucking hats and shit?
Yeah, half scarves, yeah.
All the ones in Bulgaria, because I always find that dead interesting, and I always want to go and film the swag sellers, because I think you get a lot of colour from filming that sort of stuff. But he was selling, like, sunflower seeds and water, and they all had newspapers. But obviously, I can't read Bulgarian, so I don't know if that's today's newspaper or last week's or whatever. I just noticed as before I was going in, like, there's a lot of people just standing here with stacks of newspaper, and I don't know what the crack is. Is it, like, you know, the pink? Is it, like, the sport paper, or... I just didn't get it. And then when I get inside, the ground's that fucking old and dilapidated. Because they've only just come up. I think they got, like, put into administration and dropped down to, like, the third division or some shit. And you can tell when you go in, the ground is fucked. Like, it's it's proper fucked. In the 60s, it would have been called, like, in disrepair, right? 50 years later, it's just fucked. So I got the dearest ticket. And I think they just seen me coming at the ticket office. And I was just happy to get a ticket, to be honest. Because I'd gone there. I'd left from the hotel 2 hours... Because I wasn't meant to be going there. I was there for an MMA event. So I wasn't meant to be going to the game. And I had no fucking idea what I was going to do. So when I gets to the ground and I gets to the ticket office, which is just one of those like prefab like porter cabins outside the ground, and I say, can I buy a ticket? The fact that she said yes just made my day. So I was like, right, sound. And I just said, she went, where do you want to sit? And I'm like, not bothered. So she sold me the dearest ticket, which was £6.
Yeah, I was going to say, it can't be much.
No, so I wasn't asked. I knew that the tickets ranged from £1 to £6.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's 12 fucking lev, I think it's called, the currency.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever. So she gave me a ticket and I went in. And then when I got in, I'm on like, you know, the long side, obviously not behind the goals is the cheap bit. So I'm just beneath like the club directors where I'm sat.
Yeah.
And all the seats, I didn't notice. As everyone started coming in, I seen everyone with a newspaper, and they're putting the newspaper on the seats. And I'm like, what are they doing there? And then I noticed the guy in front of me who hadn't bought a newspaper. And they were red seats, but do you like the ones that Upton Park was last year?
Yeah.
They were red, but they were burgundy, but they were faded like fuck, so it was just white crispiness on the outside.
Yeah.
Well, these seats was that, but probably 30-year-old. So everyone that was sitting on them was just getting like a white seat imprint on the back. It was madness. So that's what everyone was getting the newspaper for. They was putting the newspaper down. And I was like, there you go, a bit of local knowledge. Next time I'm at a game in Bulgaria, should I ever be, get the newspaper off the guy outside because the seats are fucked.
I thought it was just planting the sunflower seeds. You put them down, you get the water, then you get the paper out and wait for them to grow.
But nothing they didn't sell anything inside the ground. As I walked up, I meant to film this, but I just completely forgot because I was fucking nervous in there, to be honest. It was the most intimidating atmosphere I've ever witnessed. From a crowd. And if you've not watched the video, because loads of you fucking haven't, because you've just looked at the title and gone, fuck it, go check it out, because it's a really good video, actually. If I do say so myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't play around trumpet too much.
There's like a painters and decorators table at the top of the steps as you walk in. And there was a girl there selling, not bottles of water, and you'll see why if you watch the video, because they're fucking hoying the bottles of water that they've managed to sneak in at Ludogorets players. Honestly, it's the most intense atmosphere I've ever witnessed. So you can buy a cup of water for like 50p or sunflower seeds in there. And I was like, what sort of fucking sunflower seeds? And then you get in there, every fucker's munching on sunflower seeds. Don't get it.
But that was the same in Spain. They all end up like over your shoulder as well. Because people are
everywhere,
just like,
it's like the most... messiest thing. I went to a baseball game in America in San Francisco with the missus when we was on our honeymoon, and there's a lot of people eating sunflower seeds there.
That
and I clocked why baseball games are 4 hours long and known as the American pastime, because it's just about drinking and eating. I can get behind a party like that. But everyone sat around us, it was hot dogs as you'd imagine, and sunflower seeds, and it's just the messiest shit ever, innit? It gets everywhere.
The seeds are so steep as well. They're just coming straight down on you. Brush that sunflower seed off your...
Oh, they're standing as well, so it's just fucking...
version of brush that dirt off your shoulder, innit? Brush that sunflower seed off your shoulder.
It's not the same cadence, has it?
No, not quite. But, I mean, you can make it work. Like, conversationally, you can make it work.
Arsenal's finished. Arsenal have done the business. Sanchez free kick. I think it was in the first half.
Yeah, it was.
Has pretty much secured them the points with whatever happened in the second because it froze. I think it was Ozil actually, wasn't it, that got that one.
Yeah, that's all.
How do you see the season panning out from here on in? Who's your thinking for the top four and what order?
Thing is, Arsenal, I mean, they've got so many games in hand, haven't they? They win them all. They're in fourth, I think. Maybe not quite on goal difference. But, yeah, I still think
they're 3 points off us, I think.
Yeah.
I think they're still 3 points off us.
They do finish strong as well. And Liverpool, I don't really know about. They've been a bit unpredictable this year, haven't they? They have a couple of months on and then a couple of months off. So if anyone does drop out, I think it'll be them. I think City will finish strong as well. So I reckon it's probably between you and Arsenal for fourth, City third, Spurs second, and Chelsea first. Arsenal might win again next week.
We got two games in hand on Liverpool and a game in hand on City, and we play City. So if we win both our games in hand, we've got on Liverpool and the one we've got on City, we go level on points with Liverpool. I'm not sure, obviously, what the goal difference situation is, but it's not far off. They're ahead of us, but it's not far off.
Yeah.
And then if we beat City as well as winning our game in hand, we go above City. That's obviously going to be a big ask. But I think it's in United's hands as far as I see. The issue is, one of the games in hand is Southampton away, not an easy place to go to. We have got to play City. We have got to play Arsenal. And that, as you know, could go either fucking way, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, Arsenal could Arsenal it, or they could turn up and actually fucking beat someone for a change.
Yeah.
Although we bullied them big time at Old Trafford, and they were so fortunate to get a point out of that game. That midfield three of Herrera, Carrick and Pogba completely fucking destroyed them. And I've no idea how they managed to be in a position to even get an equaliser at the end. They should have been fucking long gone. They were shite. And then we got to Spurs. And we beat Spurs very well. I think it was December we played them, and we beat them very well. But they're a different story at home, and they've got a bit between the teeth, and we're getting fucked about with Europa League, so...
How do you feel about the Europa League? Because I've got a mate who supports Man United. He reckons you might kind of give up on the league if you get into the semi-finals, because, you know, that's a path into the Champions League, isn't it? It's a trophy, and it's a path into the Champions League. It's almost...
But it's a knockout competition, isn't it? I mean, even if you get to the final, you can't just say, fuck it, fuck the league, let's concentrate on this. Because if you then come fifth or sixth and just lose to a scrappy offside deflective goal in the final, which, let's face it, could fucking happen. I think you've just got to take it, as cliched as it is, I think you've got to take it one game at a time.
Yeah.
And you've got to try and win every single match from now to the end of May. And we're not going to, but you've got to try. I think there's more margin for error in the league, but it's like that. Whereas there's essentially no margin for error. I mean, we don't even need to lose on Thursday night and we're out.
Yeah.
No.
Because he rested Ibrahimovic on, was it Saturday or Sunday? Sunday, didn't he? That says something. It's not often, really, you see Premier League managers rest players for Europa League games.
I think the only time he's fucking rested Ibra was when he played Northampton, I think. I think he came off the bench then. So, yeah, we've not... I thought when I saw the team, I didn't think it. I fucking said it. I said it on Full Time Devil Stream and I tweeted it. I was like, that is Jose playing his hand that he has said the league is not fucking going to happen for us. Let's put all the eggs into the Europa basket. Yeah. I think he set us out for winning, but I expected to lose.
Yeah.
I think. He was sort of hedging his bets a little bit with Thursday night. As far as the Europa League as a competition, it doesn't do anything for the stature of Manchester United as a club.
No,
it's literally
not
a tool that we can get back into the Champions League with. I don't want to be in it next season.
What, the Europa League?
No.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Rashford's goal against Bournemouth seems to have sorted him out a bit. Because he had a very similar chance against Chelsea last time he played him, didn't he? And then this time, finished it straight away, seventh minute. Do you reckon he's going to sort of kick on a bit? Like, because he's had a bit of a rough middle patch of the season, hasn't he? He started quite well, and then the middle's been a bit.
Well, he's not. Dodgy. He hasn't played up front, but he's not. He's not ready to play up front every game yet.
Yeah.
He's got some wonderful fucking qualities, and the best one being his attitude to everything.
Yeah.
His attitude is absolutely perfect, but he was never like a Gary Goals, Ruud van Nistelrooy style striker. Like, I watched him from when he, I think he was 15 when he first came into the under-18s, and he's never been a Gary Goalski. He's never just been a guy that's just fucking goals, goals, goals. He's that pressing, high defensive, hurrying forward that does get himself into good positions, but his finishing has never been his best attribute. He's never even been close to his best attribute. I wrote about him, it might have been a year and a half ago. It was well before he made his debut. It was about 6 months before he's made his debut, I think. Or maybe a bit less. Might have been 3 or 4 months before he made his debut. And I said, I love watching him because I love the intensity. It's like he's playing angry all the time. It's like you've robbed the ball off him. He's like, fuck, give me the ball! And I love that intensity because you don't see that often in players. Yeah. And there's a couple of players that had that in the same side. Joe Riley was another one. And there's a game that I keep talking about it because it was, honestly, I've never seen anything like it on a football pitch. It was QPR and it was in the under-21s. And he was playing Rashford on the left wing and Riley at left back. Both of them technically out of position. One's a right back, one's a forward. And the right back for QPR, after about an hour, every time he got the ball, he just kicked it out. Like, literally just punted it into touch like he's fucking playing rugby union. And that was because every time he got the ball, Rashford was fucking tear-arsing at him and Riley was tear-arsing at him. And they're both exactly the same mentality. And they just fucking kettled him. His head fell off completely. He had no touch. He had nothing. He just completely fell to pieces. And Rashford was doing that yesterday to David Luiz and Cahill. He was forcing mistakes out of them. And that's one of his best attributes. Now, when he does get into... what I ended up writing about him was, if he finds the composure to start finishing his chances, because there were so many times... I think it was in the FA Youth Cup. Not the game that we went out. We got twatted off Chelsea in the FA Youth Cup that season with Rashford in the team and with Fosu Mensah and Tuan Zebe in the team. But I just showed you it's not about the results at that level, clearly, because we've gone on and had how many debuts from that side that got completely fucking destroyed. Yeah. But Rashford was going through one-on-one time after time and it was going over the bar. It was fucking going wide. And you just think, he's getting into these great positions. He just needs to take a breath. And then when he breaks onto the scene... And he scores the goals that he scores. And you look at the goals against Arsenal, the one in the Manchester derby, the one against you lot. And you're like, this kid's got no composure. Shut the fuck up, House, and you don't know what you're talking about. But I think you've seen a little bit of that this season. I think it was a bit of a surprise factor last year. And I think also the games that he was played in was against teams that was going to come and attack us. West Ham was having a good time last year. You came and attacked us. Arsenal are always going to come and attack you. City are going to attack you and you're going to have even games. And that was where Rashford excelled because... He works great against teams that play a high line because he's fucking so quick over that first couple of metres. It doesn't even make sense sometimes. Like, he's so far behind the ball and you're like, oh, someone's got that comfortably. And then he's in front of him or he's putting pressure on him and he's making him fumble with it and you're like, how the fucking hell's he done that? I think that you've got to play it to his strengths. And I'd said before the Chelsea game, Rashford will be the one. I didn't think he was going to play him, but I said if he does, Rashford will be the one because of his sheer pace in the channels behind him, and that's how you beat a team like Chelsea. Take Kante out of the game. Stop playing it down the middle where he's going to have an influence. Go wide, go into the channels, go fucking long if you have to. Find Rashford, and he will do some business for you. And that's what he did. The problem is people now project, well, he did it against Chelsea. He must be able to do it against West Brom. But West Brom at home, at Old Trafford, is such a different fucking kettle of fish. They're going to sit back and collapse. They're going to have four men around that centre-forward. There's going to be no space for him to run into behind. And he's not developed his game enough yet. I mean, he's only 19. I'm not saying he's never going to, but yet, right now, I don't think... If people are saying if Ibra goes, let's just play Rashford. Like, that's not a good idea. He's not ready yet. I like the guy. I fucking love him. But he's not there yet. I think he might get there because I think his attitude and his work rate tells you that this is a kid that's going to put the graft in the training pitch. Just by the way he plays the game, you can see that.
And he hasn't got that,
he's developed so much in this 12 months since he made his debut that he couldn't put him in the under-21s. Now, it'd be fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think give him another couple of years in and around this top level and there'd be a serious player there, I think.
And I think he doesn't have that Billy Big Bollocks attitude either, does he? He's had that season he had last season, quite easy for a 19-year-old, 18-year-old to sort of get distracted and think he's already made it.
Oh, I'm sure,
he seems to be quite well grounded. Speaking of the old Zlatan going, who is the replacement? It's not Lukaku, is it? Who Everton are saying they want to sell for 100 million quid now.
I'd love it to be Lukaku. I don't think you're getting 100 million quid for him. That's nuts. I think he's going Chelsea, though.
Yeah.
He's, I'm hearing mad stuff. Like, I'd heard United had put a bid in from a guy that knows this shit, that United had put a bid in for Ozil. And I was like, why? Like,
yeah.
I consider several players to be very similar in ability and in qualities, and that's Mata, Mkhitaryan, Ozil, and the other name is James Rodriguez, because that's the one that's always linked with United, and I just think that's fucking bullshit. And then this morning, I was chatting to someone, and I was like, what do you know? And he goes, the person that he deals with thinks that Rodriguez to United is all but done for the summer, because Mourinho really likes him, and it's the position that he's after. And Arsenal obviously fucked us off for Ozil, and I'm like, why are we signing? Why are we going to have three number 10s? Is he going to invent another formation? Like, how the fuck is this going to work?
Yeah.
When we've got issues with a number 9 potentially. I don't think another number 10 is the fucking answer. I think Mata and Mkhitaryan are both great footballers. I don't think you're getting a level up with Ozil or Rodriguez. I think you're just getting a real fucking similar footballer. I'd love Lukaku. I don't think Griezmann's the same player either. I would love Lukaku. If it's not Lukaku, I'd love a Lewandowski, but we're never signing Lewandowski. Oh, so,
yeah, he's God
I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do. Maybe you go for a two-striker system with Martial and Rashford and possibly Griezmann, and you play two out of them three if that's how you're going to rock it.
Yeah.
Clearly with a number 10 behind. I don't fucking know.
Yeah. But yeah, Zlatan, what's that stat about him as well, like missing the most key chances or whatever? To me, that just says like he's getting...
Yeah.
That says more to me about the amount of chances he makes himself.
Well, that's the difference between what we've done with...
He scored 17, isn't he, in the league?
Yeah.
So he's missed 18 chances, but he's scored 17 as well, which is more than a lot of people.
He's not just missed that. I mean, he's had over 130 shots, I think, and scored 28 goals. So he's missed over 100 chances, or 100 shots at least. You wouldn't call them all big chances. And even the top most deadliest strikers in the world, they get around 30% tops. But he's operating around about... I think the club as a whole is doing about 12.5%. I think he's doing about 15%, which is down from what he normally does. He normally does 25, 26%. If he was doing 25, 26%, then fuck me, mate. How much more has he got? He's going to have got nearly double what he's already got, which is a great return. He's going to end up with over 30 goals, without a shadow of a doubt. So
yeah,
you'd have been talking him doing another fucking 50-goal a season at United when he only does that against Farmers, doesn't he? He's really impressed me. He has really impressed me. I'd keep him for another season just because I think... The instability United have had over this last couple of years, any form of stability is going to be good for us. I think Mourinho's proven himself, not only with what I saw yesterday, because I've seen it a few times now, with tactical fluidity from him is fucking excellent. But he's also closing in on Fergie's record of undefeated league matches. And he's doing that in his first season after taking over a really ordinary United side. So I think you've got to take your fucking hat off to that, I think. He's doing... He's doing good work, and I think another summer... Well, look at the four signings he made. They've all been fucking brilliant. None of them have flopped in the slightest. So, statistically, he's going to have one absolute fucking nightmare of a signing next year. I think it's good to prepare ourselves for that right now, because...
Even Fergie had Jembas, didn't he?
Fergie had a lot. When you go through it, it's probably like 50-50 of players that worked and players that didn't. So for Jose Mourinho to knock it out of the park with four bangers in his first season, fair fucks to him. There's no way he's doing that again. There's no way we sign four players and they're all mint. No way. One of them's going to be absolute fucking donkey. And it'll be like 80 million worth of absolute donkey as well. Because that's the fucking supermarket we're shopping at the moment, isn't it? What are you lot going to do? What's West Ham going to do next year? Is there any rumours or anything? Are you going to fuck them all off?
There's always talk about strikers, but then, so about this time every year, we always get, about 3 weeks ago, they were talking about Wayne Rooney, weren't they? And then they were talking about Lacazette again. It's like, no, we're not going to sign any of these players. I think they leak these rumours about season ticket renewal time. And then the reality
that's another one of them conspiracies everybody has, doesn't it? They fucking do it on purpose, and I don't think they do.
The reality is we end up with Snodgrass and Abel Hernandez or something. So, yeah, I don't know. I've got no idea what we're going to get, but we need a right back. We need a good centre forward, but than every club in the world does.
What's in your academy, though? Because I thought West Ham had a fucking banging academy, or was that 10 years, 15 years ago?
We got that Reece Oxford lad, but he's, you know, he's we've loaned him out again and doesn't seem to be playing. I think he's at Reading. Yeah, he's at Reading, but he's not really playing very much. And I think that's the problem with quite a lot of our loanees. They're not really playing very much. So I don't know what we got in terms of youth that's ready to come through. There's a 16-year-old. I think we actually signed him this summer. He might have come through the academy, but we got a kid called Dominguez Kina, who is going to be really good. Like he's got a couple of first team appearances at 16.
That was a decent sign.
Yeah, and then there's a lad who we signed from Valencia. He's on loan at Oxford at the moment, called Tony Martinez, and he was doing really well in the youth sides, and he scored a few for them as well. So hopefully he can make the step up next year, because this year I think we signed Ashley Fletcher from ULOT, and that didn't quite work out for whatever reason. And we signed a geezer called John Caleri as well, who's a bit hopeless, but he's played more than Fletcher. Fletcher just seems a bit, he's just lacking a bit of polish. You know, I can see
Fletcher. He went out to Barnsley, didn't he, at the end of last season? And was it last season or season before?
Last season, I think.
Yeah, it was last season. And he did well.
Yeah.
But I think that might be around his level for a couple of years until he finds his feet. I think he's got I think he probably can play in the Premier League at some point, but it was an eye-opener of a move. You know, it raised a few eyebrows. You're like, can I really?
Well, because he was the one who was meant to get the Rashford chance, wasn't he? But he was injured at the time. Well,
people have said that. No one was meant to have got it, really.
I mean, it was just
unprecedented number of injuries that we had.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of them, isn't it? I mean, you could argue James Wilson and Will Keane should have got it as well. And
yeah.
But I've never seen anyone take the chance that they've been given like Rashford, though. I mean, you can't fucking deny anything. Every fucking England and everything, he's just been like, yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah. Fletcher's had his chances as well, and he's not really delivered on that. But the way he plays, you know, he's a big lad, isn't he? And I can see him really only... I know everyone obviously hits their prime at sort of 27, 28, 29, but I can see him becoming like a good player as he gets older and smarter, but like a very good player. Not just sort of hitting a prime, but kind of taking a next step or taking a step to the next level. But yeah, I think he's got a few years, at Huddersfield. Well, they might be coming up, but a few years in the sort of northeast. I think
if he'd have gone to a Championship team, top end, you know, like I said, Brighton, Huddersfield, even a Newcastle or somewhere like that, and he'd have been playing on a regular basis. So how often has he played for you this year?
Less and less as the season went on. At the beginning, because we were shocking at the beginning, and I mean, we've been shocking all season, but we're particularly shocking at the beginning. And when we were getting desperate for choices, he maybe got a couple of starts. He was certainly coming off the bench quite a lot. And when we were in, for the 3 minutes we were in the Europa League, he was getting games in that and the League Cup, because he scored against you lot in the League Cup, didn't he, Old Trafford? But since we managed to get ourselves thrown out of all the cup competitions in the opening rounds, he's struggled for chances recently. And that Jonathan Caleri that I was talking about, he's probably the third choice striker. We had Diafra Sakho, who's finally back in, finally back to fitness. And then the rumour is, but given that he's completely mental and has shown himself to be mental several times, we put him on the bench behind Carroll. Obviously, Carroll was starting, and he refused to be on the bench, so we just dropped him. So he's obviously lost his head again. But
what the fuck is wrong with these players, man? I get it's hard. Like, I look at, like, Mata being on the bench every week and stuff, and you're like, that's not right, is it? He should be fucking playing. He's a wonderful footballer. But at the end of the day, it is your job, and you've got to just fucking get on with it, haven't you?
Yeah. I think Sakho's got, like, I think there's something not quite right with him as well. Because he gets into trouble quite a bit, and, you know, there's sort of pretty unsavoury stories that come out about him. Like getting in fights and kind of like domestic violence allegations and things like that.
Crazy. Hasn't Morrison ended up back at yours as well? No, QPR
he went, wasn't it? QPR, yeah. Yeah, he had his fun little stint in Lazio. He basically sat on the bench doing cryptic tweets for 2 years.
Yeah. My mate works at Wigan, and he was on trial there. And he goes, he found out that he can only get fined 2 weeks' wages every month when he was at Lazio.
Yeah.
He goes, that's like the PFA law or some shit. Like, you can only fine a player 2 weeks' wages every month. He goes, so he would train at the start of the month for a week and then disappear for 3 weeks. He'd like come back to Manchester and that for 3 weeks. And they could only fine him 2 weeks. So in his fucking twisted mind, he's like, well, I'm only doing a week's work and I'm getting paid for two. Bonus. Yeah. I mean, work. Fucking playing football. Yeah. So yeah, that's what he was doing. And then Lazio was like, oh, just fucking get rid of him, whatever. So he'd gone to Wigan, and I was saying to my mate, like, how good does he look? Because I know if anyone could get a tune out of him, I would expect it to be Warren Joyce at Wigan. And he goes, he looks so fucking far off the pace. He goes, when you find out that he's been playing football 1 week, like a month for the last 7 months, he goes, it shows. He goes, he's fucking overweight, he's off the pace. He goes, he looks like he don't give a fuck. And I was like, are you going to sign him? Because even, you know, a team of Wigan's budget, like, it's a free signing, pretty much. But he's magic. You're talking a Pogba-level footballer when he can be asked. Like, you've got to take a punt on him, haven't you? And he was like, I think they're trying to get him fit. He goes, if we sign him, it would be a deadline day thing. And then he ended up at QPR, didn't he? And I don't even know if he's played. I think he came off the bench, but I think that's all he's had.
Yeah, I think he's had a couple of games down there. I think also managers are a bit reticent to sign him too close to Manchester, aren't they? Because he's got all his fucking troublemates up there, hasn't he?
Well, it didn't fucking stop him when he went to Italy, so.
No. Well, that's the thing. But like in England, you can keep a bit more of an eye on him. But I think that was when he was at West Ham. That was always an issue. It was Sam Allardyce didn't want him to go home. He was like, "You fucking stay here and you concentrate." And when that sort of 4 or 5 months where, you know, I think Allardyce gave him the first proper rocket up his arse he'd ever had, 4 or 5 months he looked really good. But then he got dropped a couple of times and then the attitude just goes, and he was back, you know, he's back in the, didn't care again. And that's when we
modern day Gazza, he really is.
Yeah.
Unbelievably talented, unbelievably fucking fragile at the same time. I remember the first thing he did when he made his debut for United was a back heel flick. That's like his first touch. He came off and he had his back to goal. He was on the edge of the D. Someone played a ball into him. And rather than just like controlling it, like, oh, nervous, first touch, playing at Old Trafford. I think it was at Old Trafford at least anyway. He does a back heel flick and spins him behind someone. And you're like, Ravel Morrison, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
When him and Pogba played in the 18s, there was a centre midfield partnership. And you would be forgiven thinking it was a strike partnership because you'd look at the result and it'd be like, Pogba got two, Morrison got one. Morrison got two, Pogba got one. And they was providing the assist for each other. And you go, yeah, that's a centre midfield partnership, that.
Proper milk cap heroes, aren't they? What is it called?
Fucking milk mental, cap? Yeah. It's mad how the careers have just fucking gone like that, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you lot bought for Pogba and then, like, what Morrison could be worth at the same time. Like, he should be worth so much. I think
he should be. Plus the 15% extra because he's English. Like, yeah. He should have broke the 100 million barrier.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, at 18, there was like, I mean, the goal he scores against Liverpool in the FA Youth Cup as well and runs to the cop like that. And you just think, if you could have kept him on a straight and narrow. I mean, I know you never could have, and the kid probably never had a chance, but you find out about what happened in his childhood. He never had a chance. It's just such a fucking shame and a waste of talent because he literally did have it all. I mean, I think Fergie said he might have said it's the most naturally gifted footballer you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I don't think you take words like that from Sir Alex lightly.
I think that there's always things like that. One of your coaches said he's the best player since Paul Scholes. And obviously since Paul Scholes has been Pogba's and, well, the rest of the class in 92.
Yeah, so Paul Scholes came through in 1994, so...
Yeah.
It's a long fucking time ago. And yeah, he was a great player. Unbelievably talented, but again, it's just completely fucking wasted, isn't it? Do you know what? I think we're going to wrap it up there because this is going to take me forever to process now.
I mean, I'm sat on the floor as well. I don't know if you can tell. So I'll be happy to stand up and get on a seat.
But thank you to Rob.
Preserving Wi-Fi.
What are we calling this shit again? Can we remember?
Career-ending tackle or something. What was it? Fisherman's Corner.
So this is whatever you fuckers decided to call it on Twitter. I can't remember.
Drippy legs.
But thanks to Rob. Go and give him a follow on Twitter and go and check him out on the Football Republic. He is the one with the best show that's on there, so go and check that fucker out. And we'll be back again next Monday with the warm down. And if this goes well, every single Monday with your favourite influencers, unless we can't get them on, and we probably won't be able to get them on, and you'll end up with Rob again. Thanks for watching. See you later.
Every week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.